Hello and welcome to the Chris Allen Podcast, brought to you in association with WCRFM, Wolverhampton's local radio station. You can always catch up with WCRFM via 101.8 FM, also by listening online at wcrfm.com and by telling your smart speaker to play WCRFM. On this podcast, we're going to be hearing from Councillor Stephen Simpkins, who is the Deputy Leader of the City of Wolverhampton Council. He's reflecting on the failed levelling up bid that went in for Bilston, which would have brought about a new health hub. Councillor Chris Burden is a Cabinet Member for Education, Work and Skills. He'll be talking about the investment in schools across the city, also some spectacular educational attainment in 2022, bearing in mind, of course, we were in lockdown and a lot of homeschooling happened at that time as well. Peter Ems is the Volunteers Coordinator at Wolverhampton Voluntary and Community Action, and we'll be talking about the Literature Festival at which many volunteers will be taking part, and also the chance to volunteer there and in other places, as well as the support given to all organisations who engage volunteers there as well. John Denley is the Director of Public Health. He'll be explaining the need to protect ourselves against COVID and flu, with 1 in 25 people in the city having COVID at this moment in time. But the focus in health is now shifting to general well-being, with a chance to get health checked in the next few weeks at the Mander Centre. And although there's been some spectacular improvement with regard to deaths through drug-related problems, there is a real problem at the moment with alcohol addiction across the city, and what's going to be done about that as well. First of all, though, here's Councillor Stephen Simpkins, the Deputy Leader of the City of Wolverhampton Council. He is also the Cabinet Member for the Inclusive Economy, and he's the Councillor for Bilston East as well. And I put it to him, it must be really disappointing to hear that this bid had failed.
Do you know what? All the time, effort and work that the officers and working with groups and user groups and that for us to get this, and it's sorely needed. You look at the health inequalities for in and around Bilston, and it would have been putting us in a good position health-wise moving forward. With me, Bilston, well, it'll be Bilston South in the new elections, but in Bilston East as it stands now, with Lowy, we'll have the worst health, and all in and around Bilston, it's the worst. Bilston North, Ettingshaw, it's the worst. So our lifestyles are possibly the worst within the city. What concerns me is that women live longer than men, generally.
Yeah.
But a rich man living in the affluent side of the city will live. A rich man will live longer than a woman in the poorest side of the city. That's a real imbalance, and the health hub was to address that. And also, you know, it takes the pressure off New Cross. New Cross just ain't big enough. The city's grown from the last census, so 260,000 odd, and we've never kept pace. You know, and you can only fit so much into New Cross. I mean, if we had a bit of foresight, we'd have retained the Royal Hospital, but, you know, that's in the past.
But there must be, there must be other people around the country, though, in terms of need, to say, well, we needed this and we didn't get it either. So it's very difficult, isn't it?
I never dispute that, but what you want to do is want to see how am you going to tackle the worst inequalities, not just health-wise, economic-wise, job-wise, within the city. Surely a government should be prioritising the worst in the country. So I don't want to detract or sort of say, oh, you've got it them and took it them and took it off us. No, you know, time and time again, I keep saying this, and I'm saying this to ministers and fellow politicians, especially combined authority level leaders and that. It's not what you want to give us. It's what we need to do to save you money in the future. Now, the health hub at Bilston really would resolve that. It's a great example, that is. So if you can get people healthier, that'll save money, especially for the NHS, but also we'd have a better population, a healthier population. So for me, it really, none of it adds up. And the biggest one is the Green Corridor, which was the northeast's bid. That would have given us the opportunity for generations to build careers in the new technologies coming forward, the green tech. And also that then solves problems for the future that we're going to face, climate change and, you know, whatever you want to budget up, travel, whatever. That gives us people opportunities to have a good quality of life. So I think it's sort of like, it's self-defeating, I think, that the government have done, and I don't think they realise it. Rather than balance the books, it should be investing for the future and investing in generations that
They would
will
say, though, that
build.
they are investing in different places in different ways, and they haven't got enough to go around, aren't they?
What I will do is refer back to what I said. I don't want to detract from any other part of the country. It would be useful if we had an industrial plan and we could adhere to that. It'd be useful of what the actual government really wants this nation to be. Now, perhaps it was our fault in years gone by. We was reliant on engineering. The West Midlands, and specifically Bilston and Wolverhampton, was engineering. I often hear it bandied around and said, there's a toolbox of the world. Well, all those jobs went. What did we replace it with? And really, we should, if you look back, not put all eggs into one basket.
But now
Where's the new in?
we are we where we are now. Obviously, there are opportunities with green technology coming along, and obviously there's local training around that. But going back to the health aspects, health inequalities have been around for a long, long, long time. Do you think the health hub, do you think £20 million would have made that big an impact? And if, you know, what can be done instead?
Well, I know for a fact that as all people from Wolverhampton, especially people from Bilston, we're resilient. So we'll pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and look, we are going to take this off the table and we're going to progress. But we'll have to look for different ways and different funding streams to do it. This is about investing in the whole of our city, but the whole of our country. It should be what we need, not what we're given. Now, I can move on to the assumptions that are made about council tax and the assumptions that the government have made about rent increases. They're offering 12%, which is CPI 1% on. Who comes up with these figures and how do they know where we live? And where does that leave the local authority with the shortfall of income if we don't do it? And that ain't just us, that's all local authorities of every level. If you give us more, we're in the cutting edge.
What you're saying
We
is
can
that we're on the
deliver.
front line. We know what we need.
We know
We
what
know
we
we
need and
and
we
we
know
can
where
make
we
it go
can
as far as
deliver
it
it.
can do, yeah.
Of course we can, and we're auditable and accountable. And to coin a phrase that the Metro Mayor said, we shouldn't, well, actually, he coins my phrase in that one. We shouldn't have to go to the begging bowl, and we shouldn't compete against neighbouring authorities or authorities in the country.
And this is a cross-party issue, isn't it? When you talk about the Metropolitan Mayor, obviously from not from the same party as you, he's a Conservative
No,
mayor, so therefore.
from the television interview, he was quite scathing of the government, and it's only what I've been saying for 10 years, 8 years on the combined authority, and it's what we've been saying. Give us the tools and then judge us on our results. That for me is the most sensible way to move things forward. That makes common sense.
They say, you know, and you're right. Bilston people are resilient. I wouldn't argue with that one at all. And other people across Wolverhampton, Wensfield as well. And behind a lot of the health inequalities that you mentioned there are often, they're often due to perhaps, you know, smoke a lot more or eat the wrong stuff and whatever. And often that comes back down to mental health as well, doesn't it? It comes to people dealing, trying to deal with life, and sometimes then what they do
Well,
physically doesn't follow it up.
we will see a massive increase in mental health and stress issues. Now, my experience of 20 odd years is that mental health is always the poor relation to physical health, because you can see a broken bone, you can see, physical stuff. But mental health, and again, that boils down to the quality of life. So if you've got a good job, you've got a decent job where you're safe and secure, takes the stress levels out.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to be faced with people all across the country who are going to be wondering how they're going to meet their bills. And I don't see no assistance in that respect. We will do, and Ian Brookfield, the leader, is quite right on this. We will do everything we can to protect as many people as we can. But it comes to a point where we've got to say, government, you've got to give us more. Now, I've noticed in recent times that there's a couple of administrations in local authorities that have gone to the war. And it's like, do you want us all to go to the war? Because it seems that way. And it's just, but like I say, we will get the fine detail of the report that's come back from Levelling Up. We'll go through it with a fine tooth comb and we'll see what we can do, and we'll do as much as we can. And the projects that we've got around the city centre, I'm going to suffer for this. West Side, they keep saying, when are you going to get it developed? Well, some of that would have helped to bring in private investors. So today, all about just the central projects. You know, it gives us the opportunity to look to the future. And I just think there's going to be a whole generation across this city that's going to miss out on opportunities that we'd got plans for. We'll keep them plans and we'll adjust them to what we can do and deliver what we can. But it's going to have to be project by project, piecemeal by piecemeal, because that's the nature of what we're in. And that ain't just us. That's going to be Dudley, Walsall, Sandwell, Birmingham, Solihull, Coventry, Warwickshire, even the Shires. We need that assistance to deliver more than not ask for more in the future.
That's Councillor Stephen Simpkins, obviously fearing a knock-on effect for investment in the city with that failed bid for the Bilston Health Hub. Councillor Chris Burton is a Cabinet Member for Education, Work and Skills. And when I caught up with him, I was reflecting on a wonderful picture that came out of the schools with regard to investment at St Bartholomew's Church of England School in Penn. And this picture, I'll have to get on social media for you, but it's of three children just pulling their faces and certainly upstaging Councillor Burton. I put it to him, though, this investment was really important.
Yeah, it really is a fantastic amount of investment. The picture was funny and, you know, we did laugh afterwards working with children. When you've got a group of five kids together, one's got to be putting a funny face. Yeah. But we had grinning kids and we had several that were laughing. So it's just one of them. And was great to see.
I must try and share that with the world because it was such a great picture. Try and get it onto our social media so that people can see what we're talking about. But the investment for the school, obviously great news.
Yeah, so these are new classrooms and it's one of those things. You need to refresh your classrooms over time. And the investment they've done at St Bartholomew's that we've helped facilitate as a city council is fantastic. These are amazing. You know, it's really wooden space with wooden as in lovely materials, not slowed down.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's a creative place for the kids to be. And they've taken that money and they've really used it on something worthwhile. But the kids feel really comfortable. And I was in there with them and they were painting in one corner and it was just slightly segregated enough that they could be painting there and reading there while the teachers see them at the same time.
Right.
While some were in story time and it was fantastic. They've really used that money effectively to make a great resource in Penn for these children.
And if the environment is great in which you're working or you're learning for both the teachers and also for the pupils, that also aids learning as well, doesn't it? You feel like you want to be there. You feel like you're doing a good job. And I know it just puts a smile on people's faces.
And it was putting a smile on these kids' faces. They were touching all of the wood and it was a really tactile material. And then they were getting things. They were sort of moving around the classroom where they wanted while still under the control of the teacher. It was a really wonderful learning space for these children.
And are there plans for other schools around the city to get some opportunity along these lines? Is it just a general slow rollout? You obviously can't do everything at once as you'd love to do.
You can't do everything at once. I mean, some of our later investments that are coming up are going to be much more major investments. They're going to be new builds, like the new college in the city centre.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of things we're looking at the moment. But we do, of course, refresh our classrooms whenever we do get the chance and expand where and when we can. Colton Hills will be getting a new dining facility, for instance. So there's lots of positives coming up, but it will be major investments that people will start seeing soon.
Right, and I said just before, the environment helps the learning, and you've got some good results coming through with regard to national key outcomes at Key Stage 2, Key Stage 4, compared to the region, compared to nationally.
Yeah, so it's one thing. We were really proud that these were some of our best results ever. And then we were starting to get the results from everywhere else. We were just like, hang on, we're above the West Midlands average. And then we're on par or above the national average in certain things, which is a really, really positive thing because there are areas of this country where the kids can be privately tutored. They are in a perfectly safe, stable environment all the time. Our kids don't necessarily get that benefit, that societal luxury. But then they're outperforming them. That is amazing. And that is really tantamount to the work that our teachers put in and the work of the kids themselves, but in particular, especially with those Key Stage 2 results, the work parents put in at home. So it's a massive thank you from me because our kids are really achieving. And that's an amazing thing to see.
And now, and your predecessor, Councillor Dr. Michael Hardacre, also praised teachers and also parents as well, because obviously these results are reflecting the period of lockdown when schools were not accessible.
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, with our Key Stage 4 data, we are having our first exam-based results. So it looks like they're lower than before, but they are higher than our comparable years. So we compare them to 2019, as you can imagine, because 2021, 2020, they were assessed by teachers. The kids didn't have to sit an exam.
Right.
So we should compare these to 2019 and they are higher. So we are making up that lost ground during COVID.
Because Mike, when I talked to him, he was, you know, very, very concerned, as everybody was, about losing time in school, both from a learning and a social point of view. But these results seem to indicate, actually, that the damage has been mitigated against because of the tremendous work that was put in.
So it looks like our academic damage has definitely been mitigated as far as we can, and we are seeing improvements. Socially, we can't, as a council, repair that. We can't repair the people that missed that. And we are starting to see more children with social and emotional mental health issues within the classroom, and we're doing our best as a city council to help mitigate that now that it's emerging.
And you've got increased facilities and increased awareness around SEND as well. So it's sad to hear there's a fallout in that way, but almost expected. You know, you can't be locked down in the way that we were, and for children to be locked down, who are more social, even than you, I reckon, more social in terms of needing to get out there, get with friends, and you know, and interact with each other.
Well, precisely, that 2 years of no playgroups was really hard on mothers and fathers as well. But on the kids, that's what we forget is lockdown was 1 or 2 years of our lives. That's, you know, just under 10% of my life.
Yeah.
But it's 50% of some of these children's lives, 50% of their lives that otherwise would have been spent playing and making mistakes and falling over and getting back up. And it's going to take time to repair that. But I think we're really making strides with it. And with our older kids, it's great to see that actually it hasn't had a lasting impact right on their academic performance.
Right, no, it's tremendous to see. Now, we have been encouraging, nagging parents, carers to get in the applications with regard to reception. The deadline is now passed. I know you're getting good numbers who were applying. What happens to those now who perhaps did miss the deadline or thinking, oh, I forgot all about that? What can they do?
Yeah, so of course, everyone's got to get a school place. And of course, the vast majority of parents did apply on time. As you said, when we last talked about this a couple of months ago, we were up to 50%. So the vast majority of people did on. They can get in contact with the council, but the reality is everyone will be able to get a school place. Now, some people might wish to appeal that. Of course, people who applied and didn't get their position may be much more in line to appeal theirs much more effectively, but everyone will be given a school place.
That's Councillor Chris Burden, the Cabinet Member for Education, Work and Skills. And yes, even if you haven't applied for a place for your reception child, there will be a place allocated as well. For more information, always go to wolverhampton.gov.uk. Peter Ems is the Volunteers Coordinator at Wolverhampton Voluntary and Community Action, and his job is to help support volunteers right across the city. So many people in different voluntary positions right across the city supporting different initiatives that are coming along. Well, the next one to come along is the Literature Festival. Volunteers will be key to that as well. And I said to him, he must be excited, as the Literature Festival is only a few weeks away now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great opportunity for Wolverhampton. Wolverhampton's a fantastic city with lots to offer. It's got a vibrant and strong and creative community. So I think with something like the Literature Festival coming in February, obviously between like the 3rd and the 5th of February, it's a great opportunity for people to get involved, get skills, get experience, and also just be involved and immersed in that creative content that Wolverhampton actually offers.
And we've been learning a lot from our own poet in residency, Ian Henry, who's been with us about 6 months now, and he's led on it from our side. So we've got the privilege of putting on some shows in the community hub and inviting people into different readings and whatever. And kindly, WVCA, get the new name right, have been helping us with volunteers recruiting and also making sure volunteers have a fair deal almost.
Yeah, I mean, if you imagine, we've been in Wolverhampton now because Wolverhampton Volunteers is part of Wolverhampton Voluntary and Community Action. And we've been part of that for nearly 15 years now. So we've been serving Wolverhampton for nearly 15 years. We're the first port of call for all things volunteering in the city. So it's basically anything to do with volunteering, you speak to us. If you imagine, Chris, we've got over 200 organisations registered with us in Wolverhampton.
Oh, yeah.
Offering over 400 volunteering opportunities. So pretty much, I know it's a bit flippant when I say it, but if you can imagine it, you can volunteer it.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things. And volunteering, as we say, is like stepping stones to get you to where you want to be. Obviously, we help organisations with their marketing and development of opportunities, policies, procedures. So anybody interested in, obviously, the Literature Festival, you know, it's that kind of like great experience from to get involved, to meet people, to gain experience. There's no such thing as a typical or an average volunteer.
It's all different. And I think the one thing that it definitely isn't, and I think over the years I've come across this, that people sometimes see it as free labour. Oh, well, let's get some volunteers in to do that. And that actually, well, A, it doesn't work, because, you know, you give to volunteers as much as you get from them. And it's the wrong picture you should have, really, of what people's role is as a volunteer.
Yeah, and it's one of those things when I talk about volunteering, Chris, and I go out into the community and meetings and things like that, I don't talk about volunteering. I actually talk about the benefits of volunteering.
Right.
And it's one of those things, if you've been out of work, I mean, somebody once said to me, you know, this guy once said to me at this meeting I went to, he said, I've always been told, never volunteer, never volunteer. And I said to him, was your dad in the armed forces? He says, how did you know that? You know, and because it's that thing where generationally, I said, look, if you're in the army and the sergeant major says, I'm looking for volunteers, lads.
Yeah.
It's either going to be a really dirty job or you ain't coming back. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That's never happened at Beacon Centre anywhere like that, as to the best of my knowledge. And it's that thing where the benefits of volunteering, if you've been out of work for a long time, what's the first thing that is asked for on that application form? What's your current or recent role? Oh, if your confidence is already low, you almost like give up on the first page. And then you come to references. It's that kind of like thing, really, where obviously volunteering can offer you that. If you volunteer at CAB or another local organisation, which obviously many are registered with us, MenCap or Barnardo's or Hope Centre, you know, it's that thing of, I am currently a volunteer at this organisation. These right. are my roles and responsibilities. And then obviously you've been there a while, you can potentially get a reference as well. And that's what I said about the stepping stones, really. It can give you confidence, socialisation skills. The benefits are so multiple with volunteering. So yes, the argument can be made it's free labour, but the payoff as well is quite immense as well for volunteering.
No, well, you're pushing an open door with talking about that with WCRFM being predominantly volunteer led, and the opportunities are there. Now, we know through volunteering with us has led to people having careers in the media, and even if it's not led to careers in the media, the increase in skills and confidence, you know, almost if you can be interviewed or do an interview on the radio, when you go for a job interview, how that's going to set you up.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, like, as you mentioned, confidence, it's amazing. I mean, obviously over the last 2 to 3 years, that the volunteer landscape's changed with the lockdowns and everything else like that. And many people have been impacted in so many ways. And one of them is socialization skills have been locked down. They haven't been mixing with people. They haven't been chatting. There's this fear of being going out and mixing and everything else like that. So we have noticed with volunteers coming through at the moment that there's been quite a dip in people volunteering. And not just volunteering, we've had lots of organisation where they've obviously been recruiting for paid employment, and that's actually down as well. So I think overall, 2023, we need to approach obviously volunteering with this whole new landscape and whole new approaches in how we deal with it, really.
But you're recognising, though, in that if anybody puts their hand up, so to speak, or walks through the door, that's a brave thing to do.
Absolutely. And we're the same, Chris. I mean, I've worked in this field for many years, and I've worked as a social worker. I've worked in the NHS for over 10 years. But it's one of those things where when we go to meetings and training events, we look at the delegate list. Is there anybody I know on the delegate list? And as you open the doors into that meeting room with all those tables set out, you're kind of like looking for a familiar face or somebody that you know. That's us. So somebody who hasn't worked for a while, maybe due to ill health, being a carer, mental health, all sorts of reasons. That first step into Wolverhampton Volunteers at Temple Street, it can be a massive jump, and we've got to respect that. And we treat people from a person-centred basis when they come in. And obviously we work what's best for them and those placements for that individual.
Brilliant, brilliant. So if people want to take that step, put their hand up, how's that best done with yourselves?
The best thing to do, a couple of ways really, because obviously there are places still available, like I said, for stewarding, for helping out, breaking down equipment, just making the day run as smooth as possible, really. So if people want to give us a call on 01902 328 980, that's 01902 328 980, they can give us a call and speak to myself, Pete or Sue at Wolverhampton Volunteers. We can take some information. Alternatively, you can just email at us. My email, if you wanted to contact me, is peter.ems, EMMS, at wvca.org.uk. That's peter.ems at wvca.org.uk.
That's Volunteers Coordinator Peter Ems at WVCA. And those are numbers again. Well, 01902 328 980 if you want to be in touch with him, or you can email him peter.ems, that's EMMS, at wcva.org.uk. And if you want to pop down to the Community Hub during Literature Festival, there's something on there hosted by WCRFM right through the festival there as well. And I'll be there live on Sunday of the 5th, it is, isn't it? I'd better work out the dates before we actually get there. John Denley is the Director of Public Health, and when I caught up with him, first of all, I said, how are we with regard to COVID?
Yeah, we've been talking about this for many years now.
We have.
In terms of COVID and where we are, about a year and a half ago, if we had said a year and a half ago that one in every 25 people, one in every 30 people in the city were likely to have COVID at this current time, we would be very, very alarmed by that. But, and it's the big but, because of the immunity that people have built up in relation to having COVID, but more significantly, number of people who have been vaccinated, we're in a lot better position to where we were. So it comes back to that key message again, Chris, that you and me always talk about. Get jabbed.
Just get it done, I've been saying. Just get it done.
Absolutely.
And in fact, I do know people who, you know, they have COVID is still around and they're still getting poorly and sometimes, you know, suffering greatly. But if you've had the jabs, you've got that security there that you can get through it. So it's more important there than with flu.
Absolutely. Flu. You've got flu that's knocking around, really, really prevalent. And you've also got a lot of other nasty colds and bugs as well. So, you know, you think, how do we actually manage that? Look at all we did in COVID around, you know, washing your hands and so forth. That really, really helps. Mm. So, you know, keep yourself as safe as possible by just doing those basic routine hygiene elements that make a difference.
And one of the lessons you've learned as well is about sort of reaching out to people. You've done it via different communities, but also you've had a very successful hub in the Mander Centre, and you're going to adapt that for more general health checks now.
Yeah. We've had real success with the Mander Centre, really. About 20,000 vaccines. So
wow.
Think about, you know, how many people have gone in there. A lot of people just dropping in, walking in. How many people have gone in there, had their vaccine? So we thought, well, blimey, that's a really good bit of joint work with ourselves and local hospital, RWT. We thought, well, actually, we're trying to do the NHS Health Check program, try and get more people checked and so forth. Let's try and adopt different ways of delivering that using the same facility. So hopefully, very soon, we'll be launching our health check clinics and availability of health checks through that site in the next week or so, which should be really exciting.
And that's a 40 to 74-year-olds?
Yeah, it's the NHS. It's called the NHS Health Check Programme. It's funded through Public Health Grant, but it's always delivered in our city through our GPs and our RWT, the hospital, part of the GP network as well. So they'll be doing that within that hub, which is marvellous.
No, it's great. And again, as I say, it's one of the lessons you've learned, isn't it? To try to get to, sometimes there are some more vulnerable groups than others, and therefore reaching out to them via when they're out shopping or via their faith communities has been an important lesson to learn.
Yeah, think about the past couple of years. We haven't had the access to general practice services and so forth just to get those checks. I think now we use the kind of phrase called baked in. There's been baked in illnesses over the past couple of years that will probably surface when somebody has a really significant event. So by having a health check, or indeed for putting screening programs on for cancers, for instance, and doing some catch-ups there, it's a way of catching things earlier so we can do something about it rather than the damage being done and trying to manage from a very different scenario.
So, and John, the Health and Wellbeing Board met this week and I've got some very serious challenges to face up to.
Yes, the Health and Wellbeing Board, we took a paper and discussed that our alcohol-specific deaths, usually stress, the liver and so forth, are the highest in the country at the moment. Highest in the country.
So that's not a league table you want to be on the top of. So what can be done in terms of beginning to challenge that?
If you look at the data in terms of what we can do to treat, we've looked at our alcohol treatment services and they're within the best quartile in the whole country. So if you access treatment, you have a greater probability of recovery, and we have one of the highest employment rates on the back of recovery as well. So that's really good signs all around. So it's about really trying to get as many people into services that are there, and sometimes it's a real challenge within families and communities to try and steer people towards getting support before it's a real problem.
And we just talked there about access and getting to where people are. How will you roll that out? Because, again, it's hard to communicate with people who have a very serious problem and perhaps sometimes don't even recognise it within themselves.
There's a couple of ways. Firstly, we've got our GP practices, so our NHS health checks. There's a health screening tool attached to that. But I think more significantly than that, it's what we know within our families and communities. We know this is going on, and we know that there are established behaviours that are in those communities and families. So it's about being supportive and signposting people to getting some help.
Okay, so obviously big issues around alcohol, but actually some better news when it comes to drugs.
Yeah, our drug-related deaths have halved halved compared to previous years, and that stands out more than many other areas in the country, which is really good news. And that's about partnership approach, about trying to get as much help as possible to those people who are really vulnerable, who are addicted to substances, and also working with the police to make sure, in partnership again, if anybody does overdose, that we've got a really quick reaction working in partnership to do so.
And the culture's changed, hasn't it, in terms of seeing people as perpetrators more, as being vulnerable from taking drugs now. So therefore, as more and more services come in, obviously working with the police, but then trying to cut off the supply, and those who are exploiting those who are most vulnerable. But here we're talking about those who are victims of abuse, and really there's all sorts of places they can go to in order to get that support.
Absolutely. We've got a really good network. We've got a good partnership in the city, really good treatment as well. So just come forward. Have a discussion with a family or group, any needs. We've covered alcohol and we've covered drugs in this conversation, and we're really well set within the city to provide really good support.
That is Director of Public Health, John Denley. And if you know somebody who is struggling at the moment through alcohol abuse or through drug abuse, then Recovery Near You runs the Wolverhampton Substance Misuse Service. It's a free confidential service helping anyone concerned about their own drug use or that of others. If you want to know more information about that, then go to www.recoverynearyou.org or you can call 0300 200 2400. That's 0300 200 2400. And that's it from the Chris Allen podcast for this week. You can always catch up via wcrfm.com for any podcast. And if you want to listen live to these interviews, then join me on Sunday mornings between 7 and 10 on Rise and Shine with Debbie Hookston, and also then from 12 till 2 on Chris Allen in Conversation.